Hello and welcome to the Social Recruiting Show. I'm of course Katrina Collier, author of The Robot Proof Recruiter, which I definitely do not show enough at any point. And I'm a facilitator and speaker. I'm of course joined by my gorgeous co-host, the talented talent acquisition professional, the one, the only, amazing Glenn Martin.
Hola.
And the bearded one. He's not just the bearded one. You're one of the bearded ones. Hello, Glenn. This week we have another bearded one who is also another talented talent acquisition professional. That's not a mouthful. In the wonderful, wonderful Simon Holkyard, and apparently I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes, I'm feeling very
not bad for an Australian.
I'm feeling Welcome very inferior when I'm looking at that beard. I mean, it's just a glorious, glorious beard.
It's an exercise in laziness, Simon.
Can we just quickly give a huge shout out to our sponsor, Enterprise Alumni, as well, because we wouldn't be here without them. So thank you very much for keeping us live. And welcome finally to the show. I believe, Mr. Holkyard, I booked you in May to come on this show about the awesome topic we have today.
His demands for his rider and some of his people were just so difficult to negotiate with. We had to put it back a bit.
More like our cue.
Well, I am massively antisocial, so it shows you how much I like you guys that I'm even doing this, because I just don't do this.
Well, welcome to the show, man.
Oh, no. I'm in a people industry, but I'm not a social person.
Oh, I thought you'd love it.
Oh, the irony. And on that note, as an antisocial person that's got into recruitment, how did you get into recruitment, Simon?
Like everybody, I fell into it. I went into Michael Page's offices and they said, you could be a recruitment consultant. And that literally was as sophisticated. Have you ever thought about that? And he's like, no, I don't think anyone's ever thought when I grow up, I'm going to be a recruitment consultant. That's my dream. It wasn't. But I fell into it.
Brilliant. That's brilliant, man.
Have you had anybody on the show that has actually said, yeah, from being 8 years old, I was just
two
desperate
people
to be a recruitment. Really?
Only two.
We have, haven't we?
So there was...
That I've ever met in career in recruitment as well.
Yeah, yeah. Dawn Ward was one. She definitely wanted to go into HR. Her dad was kind of HR director. And I think it was Lewis, wasn't it? Lewis Mallard?
Yeah, it was Lewis.
Lewis had definitely... So we, out of how many? 178 shows now? 179? Two people. Definitely chose to go into the world.
I've never met one, so that's impressive.
Yeah. Cool. So.
No. It is bad, though, that we don't plan a career into this.
It's just the allure. We just get allured into it. And then it becomes a career.
You never get out.
Exactly. Exactly that. So, show title, what's Simon here to talk about?
Oh, did he give his background already?
Yeah. I mean, he kind of said that he went into Michael Page's office. They got him into recruitment.
That was it.
The rest is history.
Like under a minute.
That was it. Yeah. I went to work for Michael Page for several years. I ran my own business for several years, and then I went in-house. So I've kind of done the... I've done all three.
Perfect.
We're used to having at least 5 minutes of conversation on that. I was just quickly sharing it on LinkedIn, so I didn't even...
You're fully recruitment squared, right? You've done all the areas, agency, in-house, own business... So you've got the full measure of kind of the industry, which makes this particular topic super interesting because you're coming from a really informed place. So
I think over different generations as well, which is interesting. I mean, when I got into recruitment, it was, as you're well aware, was very, very different world as well. So to see how we have grown as an industry has been interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
That changed everything, didn't it? So what year it was about the same time, wasn't it? 2003, 2004. When did you join the recruitment industry?
I think it's just before 2001. So yeah, heck of a long time. But very much landed into an old school kind of way of working. You know, if you didn't shave, you got sent home. And then quite frankly and quite shamedly, I bought into it as well and kind of really gave my all to it. So, interesting times.
Yeah.
So did you stop shaving during COVID or?
Yeah, well, this is our play for a beard sponsor for the show, Simon. So it does give us an opportunity.
I honestly think the reason I got a beard is because I wasn't allowed one when I worked in agency, and I think I'm kind of that's subconsciously I'm kind of grown a beard because now I'm allowed to, and it's amazing. Yeah. Back then, I accepted that. I was like, yeah, fine, yeah, I'll shave. And you just think if anyone asked you that today, you'd be like, I don't think so. Yeah. I'll go my own way, thanks.
No. I'm sorry, who are you? So hiring managers are not our clients. Now, I assume you don't mean in the respect of an agency where they are. I assume you mean as in-house, or do you mean in general?
No, I mean in-house. I mean, I'd certainly say when you're in agency, then they are your clients. I come at it from an in-house perspective. I don't think they are. I think the word itself, the connotations of the word, just kind of almost sets hiring manager up here and kind of talent acquisition below it. I don't even like the connotations of it. I see us as partners. I don't see us as master servant kind of relationship. But I think a lot of it has come from agency, because obviously in-house has grown over the last decade, and a lot of people that have had these behaviors from agency, quite rightly, have brought them along to in-house, and stakeholders have kept the same ones as well. So it makes sense. I know why it's there, but I think they're very, very different jobs. But you know, I'm not saying one's easier than the other, but they are. It's a different toolkit. And for me, I certainly 100% don't give them a client.
I know we weren't going to talk about that so much, but you know, sometimes the outsider point of view, I mean, I remember back in Glenn and my spring technology days, we were just told in-house recruiters shuffle CVs. That's all they do. They just...
That's the lie they tell you.
I know, but in a snapshot, what are some of the key differences? Like, because if that's okay.
Yeah. No, it's amazing how we do that, isn't it? And all in-house people think that agency are just money-grabbing, soulless vampires or whatever it would be. But no, they're not, exactly. And that, I think, you know, I've got so much respect for agency, because it's a hard, hard job. But so is in-house. And I think the difference for me is it's broader. It's broader in terms of what you get involved in. You know, there's so much now, and especially today, where you've got candidate experience, you're looking at the assessment, you're looking at sometimes the onboarding, you're looking at buying technology, the way you deal with your stakeholders. I mean, when you're in agency, you can't get them on the phone. When you're in-house, they descend on you at your desk. It's just a very
Why haven't you found me someone?
So it's a very different experience. But I think one of the great benefits has been that so many people now are coming in from agency, because they bring that commercial kind of, I agree with that. When you say when I was in agency, I thought, and this was a long time ago, but you do think they're just shuffling paper, and they don't, you know, they've got that soft underbelly, rather than being recruiters that fill jobs. You know, you've got your KPIs, you've got your commission driven. It's very, very different. But I think that meant some great mentalities come over from agency side. And we're seeing a lot more people now come into the in-house industry from agency, which I personally like.
I do, because I feel like they're driven to fill the role. At the end of the day, you need that person in the role, don't you? So there's a different benefit, because they get to then watch them grow rather than perhaps get financial reward. But it's still exciting to fill a role.
They're expected to fill roles in-house now. It's not a case of you can just use agencies. I mean, the last two companies that I've worked for were both direct hiring over 90%. It's, you know, we use agencies, but not that much. You know, you are expected to deliver whilst also delivering, as I mentioned, across that broader spectrum of responsibilities as well.
Do you think that that kind of client mentality is partly driven by the perception of kind of internal recruitment, whether it's agency or internal recruitment, that it's a service provision for the business? So therefore they adopt a kind of service-led approach, as opposed to, as you said at the top of the program, it's a business peer-to-peer, right? The business have, you know, if they're a tech team or dev team, they're delivering on a product, you have a business responsibility to make sure that they get the right people into the team. So it's a peer-to-peer relationship, as opposed to, oh, you're here to service our need, as it were, in terms of people and talent. You think that's the case?
Yeah, I do. I do think that a lot of stakeholders and hiring managers have very much compartmentalized recruitment as talent acquisition's job, not their job. And that's a deep set behavior that needs to change, because it's not a case of me as a TA professional saying it's your job. It's candidates now that are saying it's your job, and we need to hear from you, and we need more from you and less from the actual talent acquisition team. So I think it's vital, but I think getting stakeholders to understand it's their job and that everyone is a recruiter in the modern age is a very different, difficult behavior to change. You have to really show them what's in it for them, why they should do this. You know, what is in it for them, which it always comes down to.
I think having worked with a couple of kind of smaller startup scale-up businesses, I found one where the hiring managers were super receptive to getting involved in the kind of recruitment marketing side. And the actual benefits that they saw from that were almost like 2 to 3-fold based on just kind of managing an agency. So, you know, if you could, if you get the opportunity to illustrate that it really works, their involvement has that power, that impact, then there's benefits for both them and kind of talent acquisition, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's on us. I mean, if you think, you just think how much money we spend on attraction and on technology, everything that we spend, all this massive amount of money is all about, at the end of the day, what it was 10 years ago and 20 years ago, bringing a hiring manager opposite a candidate and those two people deciding if they like each other. That part of the recruitment process hasn't changed. But we spend all that money to get them in the room, and then we give that hiring manager zero support. We just leave them to, off you go. You're a hiring manager, so of course you know how to interview. Off you go. We'll leave it with you. But I do think it's on us. You know, we need to be in that room. And I think that's where you get back to that customer mentality, because when they're you think of customer mentality, you leave them to go and do it rather than challenging them and saying, actually, the customer is the company that we work for. They pay your wages and mine, and we're both here to deliver for them. So you need it, you know, you need that more support and that challenge to your stakeholders rather than just acquiescing to what they want.
Partner, right?
Yeah, partner.
And not
partnering is free. How much we spend nowadays in recruitment, partnering is not an expensive thing.
So let's just expand on that a little bit, because it links into the title of the show, which is, let's paint the scenario, and I'm sure you've had it. I know I have. Katrina certainly has it, both in terms of kind of her agency days and facilitation. You're confronted with a hiring manager with a very classic view of recruitment and what that function does for them. How do you approach that mindset? What things are you thinking? What actions, activities do you take to change their perception?
I think the main thing would be data, using data but data-driven storytelling. So using data to tell stories to them. I think when you look at these things, you've got rational and emotional reasoning. And I think you have to hit both. You have to rationally get them and emotionally get them as to why it's important that they do it. But I think data is a great way, you know, to back up. It's not a gut feeling. Look at the stats. Yeah. Look at what we're losing. Yeah. Look at some of the activities and some of the behaviors that you're doing and we're enabling. That is costing you great clients, great candidates that will
enhance our business. And their time that they'll never get back as well. Do you sort of like help them along to make them think they've come up with it? That's why I love facilitating. Like, you're coming up. You too, you guys. Master. Where you are. In a way, but that's why coaching works. You know, you and I both work with Roderick, and that's why coaching is so powerful. So you're sort of guiding them to like use the data to tell those stories to get them to realize they need to change.
Yeah, well, it's amazing what you can achieve if you don't need the praise. I think it's exactly that. Yeah, does it really matter? Just kind of get it done.
I find sometimes the visibility of kind of talent acquisition recruitment is often creates a false perception from hiring teams. They don't actually fully understand everything that a TA and recruitment team does. Some of the stuff that we do is doesn't have either a value to them. They value a CV sitting in front of them. They don't value the time it's taken to go out, engage that person, sell the opportunity in, talk to them about what they want, align that to the role, then get them into the process, get them energized for the conversation with the hiring manager. Sometimes the hiring manager is just like, oh, you got me a CV. Well done. How long did that take you? A couple of minutes? Brilliant. And that's the thing that I think we need to do better in terms of the storytelling around the full value that TA and recruitment bring to a business. Would you agree? Disagree?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, it's a great point that, because everybody, for some reason, has an opinion on being able to do talent acquisition. Everyone thinks they can do our job. I often have thought if we had the words analyst or scientist at the end of our job, people maybe respect it a little bit more, because I would never go into a data scientist and say, well, I know what you do. I can do that too. It is a skill, and it is getting harder and harder because, as I said, it's getting broader and broader in terms of what you're responsible for. Yeah. So I do think people completely undervalue what we do. But again, it's up to us to educate them. And we complain and moan, but we don't educate them on what we're doing and show them the value to them and what's in it for them. We just kind of, like you said, box up those CVs and give them and say, there you go, job done.
Mm. Yeah. I think the recruiters that do it well are the ones that sit with them, right? And then show them that how, like, I always go back to the internet and how I can just go and see how your company is treating people and therefore how you're hiring managers and showing them all that kind of stuff. You've got a cheer squad going over here from Mr. Harding.
Oh, there you go.
That was your previous point. Mm. Always good to have the cheer squad.
Yeah. But I agree with you, Simon.
My best friend ever in recruitment is Lee Harding.
He did write a beautiful comment over on LinkedIn as well. You'll have to go dig it out afterwards.
Oh, it's wicked. But I agree, Simon. I think it's incumbent on us as a kind of recruitment community to one, raise the bar in terms of the quality we expect of ourselves and each other, and kind of where the kind of recruitment industry is tracking. But equally, we do have to do a better job of illustrating the value that we deliver, whether that's via data or data and storytelling, because otherwise we're just perpetuating that kind of perception that all we do is find CVs. And that is so far removed from our kind of our role now. Well, that's not the only singular thing. And have you seen any other peers, any other people that you work with really adopt that style very well? Do they do something similar, something different? You know, when you're looking at other people, are there sort of certain things that you kind of think, oh, that's a neat approach. I might adopt that, trial that.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I just talked about Lee Harding. I basically just ripped off his career, and anything that he did, I just copied. So quite happy.
Thanks, Lee.
Just need to pull Lee on the show. Lee, let me send you a link and I'll just get you on live. That was a very short answer, Simon. We need more detail.
Come well, on. It was.
You're the guest. Talk.
Yeah. One of the things that I really like to do is debate on LinkedIn and spend time with other people and other teams. And I think in terms of what I've learned, I haven't learned it from my managers. I've learned it from my peers in the industry. And I think that's where you can get such a rich amount of information and content that you can get. And one of the great things about in-house, people share. People will share, will give it to you, and then you can add on to it and develop it. And that, for me, I always found a great thing, because when I was in agency, I personally didn't have that kind. I was in competition. Whereas in-house, I don't necessarily feel like I'm in competition. And a lot of the things that I want to do and have done previously, it's just come from seeing other people do good things. And I'm joking when you say you steal it, but you know you can use other people's what other people have done and develop it and improve it and take what you can and make it work for your business.
I
see that collaborative side to it. I think it's so lovely. So if you were to give some advice, so you've just hired a new, say, ex recruitment consultant into your team in-house, how would you suggest they go about the conversations with the hiring managers to win them over to?
Well, I suppose, first of all,
partner.
Get into the mentality of treating them like a peer. Treat them like a peer, not like a customer. You know, treat them like you are on the same level of them as them. And also, you are the expert in the room. The whole reason for your job is the business wants you to come in that room and help and support that stakeholder with how they recruit. So have that confidence, not arrogance, but have that confidence that you are the expert, not the stakeholder, and show them what's in it for them. You know, that's the biggest thing, you know, and that's quite an old sales technique, but I think it just stands the test of time. If they don't see what's in it for them, then they don't want to do it. And then they think they're doing your job rather than their job. But I do think it's that mentality that you go into your business with. Are you going in with that mentality of kind of acquiescing and being a concierge to your hiring managers? Yeah. Or are you going in as, you know, we need to change some things. There's going to be a bumpy road. I'm not here to be confrontational, but I'm here to help us get better because we both have the same customer, which is our business.
Do you think as a leader, though, you've allowed that? Because I do see some other heads of talent that I would be a little more reluctant. So, for example, if I needed to say, no, Mr. Hiring Manager, I am, or Ms., sorry, that was a bit sexist. We'll just go with man on this example. But no, Mr. Hiring Manager, I'm not working on that role until you sit down and give me a proper intake, etc. There'd be some heads of talent that go, you're not doing that. Is that also a shift that needs to happen?
Yeah, and I think I've been really lucky with the people that I've reported into that have been very supportive of that in my last job and in this job as well. So you could absolutely get that, but I think it's important that, you know, your managers have a backbone, and, you know, you can ultimately, well, it's true though, isn't it? You know, they can either say, you know what, we need to be liked. We need to be liked because that's going to be good for us. Or do we want to be respected? And if we want to be respected rather than liked, these are some of the things that we're gonna have to do. So I have always felt empowered by the people that I work. That's never been an issue. But I think it is in a lot of companies, because I think you've got politics and you've got various things. And again, you know, a lot of people just want not an easy life, but they don't want that bumpy road that you need with change.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that drives the kind of progression. I think the one thing that I find with hiring managers is trying to get their time commitment. How have you gone about that yourself in the past? How have you managed to get that commitment of time for them, possibly to a degree over and above what they expected they would need to commit to a role or a number of roles?
Yeah, it's hard. And I think sometimes you've got to deliver for them first before you properly get their time and their respect. So sometimes it's about actually not the words you say, but deliver. And then after that, you'll get a lot more time from them and a lot more support from them. Because I think stakeholders hear a lot from recruiters about what they're going to do, but then we don't do it. And I've been guilty of that many a time, by the way, and various reasons for it. But I think you've got to prove yourself and then get their time. But again, show them what's in it for them. Explain to them why it's important that they do something. Because I don't think we don't do that enough.
Yeah.
I really noticed that writing chapter 5, which to me is actually the crucial chapter of the whole book. And I crowdsourced it because it's all about the intake strategy. And it was literally setting that scene of, I am going to do this, and then I do this, and you're going to do this, and then they have to do this, and then it kind of works.
Yes, this is my job, this is their job. We've both got responsibilities. If we both do them, we'll get something good.
It'll get easier. But it was really interesting because I can't think whether it was Tanji or Maisha that was talking about that if they've been let down before as well, it gets even harder because you're up against that as well. Marcus Whedon has a comment here. Do you find that your senior peers are very quick to point fingers at recruitment stroke talent when teams are short on numbers or roles are taking longer due to inflexibility of company expectations?
Ooh, multi-layered question.
When they want like 16 different things of requirements, but actually they need 3, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, no, I think that happens. That happens throughout recruitment. I think that's just one of the core things. You know, it's our fault. And part of it is our fault, you know, because we haven't set that agenda at the beginning. And then at the end of it, yes, you know, we've been liked and we've done what they wanted, but we haven't delivered. Because we haven't done any check. We haven't created that kind of partnership that we were talking about earlier on in the show. So then it is kind of our fault as well. But I do, I mean, obviously it comes back to our door. We're there to support them hiring. If we don't get that done, we have to take responsibility for that as well.
Yeah.
But I do think
hiring, I think a lot of that comes into that.
Their recruiters, it's their job. Ultimately, this is not my job. We are hiring your job for you, for your team. You know, there's got to be some give and take.
I think sometimes they just think, oh, you're just an administrator. Like you were saying, Glenn, they'll just produce CVs.
There are administration TA teams throughout the country. There's plenty of them, and that's how it operates. You know, you take a brief, you load your job up, you get your CV, you give them a shortlist, they hire someone, done. That's it. But the job is so much more now, and especially in the environment that we're working in now, you know, there's some quite dodgy ground that some stakeholders are going into, and we're not supporting them or helping them often to, you know, to be prepared for that.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? Do you mean because of COVID, or do you mean?
No, I mean diversity and inclusion. I mean, I mean bias, unconscious, conscious bias. I think, you know, the questions that they ask, I think, you know, stakeholders need support from HR to support them in terms of what they should be doing in that room. And we're often not in that room. That was what I had an experience in my last company where there was a guy that was losing candidates hand over fist, and he'd been there for 10 years and no one had been in the interview room with him. And then when we said, look, we need to get in there, we need to just see what's going on, he saw that as a hostile act. He saw that as, you can't do that. And that was very much that, you are my, you know, I'm your customer. You can't do that. But when we got in the room, because we didn't treat him like that, we treated it like a partnership. We found that there were some really simple things, and the fact that he wasn't doing the right things, and but they need that support, and they need us to challenge them and make sure that we do it.
Yeah,
and I think it is quite tough because it's quite ingrained. So if you have, like I do, older parents, and I've said this 100 times on this show, so apologies for those that heard it. Like in 1959, when my mother got engaged, she had to leave the bank. Right, she got engaged. She wasn't even married. So that's like my parents' generation. So that kind of comes down where we've witnessed that. So we're kind of like, well, but it's okay to say, well, we can't hire her because she might go off on her babies and stuff. And the stuff that you sit here going, no, it's 2020, you can't say that. But it's so ingrained.
Oh, hugely.
Through our biases. It's quite hard just to change.
But in the next 10 years, Generation Z will dominate the market, the workplace. There'll be more of that generation than any other generation in the workplace. You know, things are changing and we have to adapt. And you know, as someone in his 40s, you've got to keep self-developing and keep adapting with that as well, because if you just stay with what you did 15 years ago, you're going to become a dinosaur and irrelevant.
I think you made a really interesting point, Simon, that recruitment is more than just bring the candidate or CV to the hiring manager. it's about, like you say, managing that whole process, interview as well, all the way through to kind of offer and potentially onboarding. And it's, again, incumbent on us to get involved in that. Where it may not have happened previously in that particular business, that's irrelevant. This is what we do now. We offer this quality of information and reflection and feedback to the business. Similar to you, been in a business previously where guy kept coming out of interviews. He's like, I'm just not sure. I haven't got enough information to go on to make an offer. Went into the interview. Well, that's because he was pitching to the candidates for best part of 50% of the interview and not really asking them many questions. So naturally, he came out of the interview not really knowing too much about the individual. So then you kind of feed that back and you see that dynamic change, and that moves it forward, right? It moves the recruitment process forward, both in terms of quality for the hiring manager and quality for the individual, the interviewee. And I think this is one of the things we need to be prepared to step up more now as a team and a function to deliver that quality and trust ourselves that we're right. You know?
Yeah. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier. How can you do that when you've spent so much money as a function to get that candidate in that room with that hiring manager? How can you then just leave it up to faith? Just off you go. It's crazy. That is and especially when you're working in candidate driven markets. I mean, I work in tech, you know, candidate is still king or queen. But it is, you know, you've got to win over those candidates. And hiring manager is the most important person in the TA process, and they're the person that can do that. You could have a terrible candidate experience right up to that interview, and your hiring manager can save it. Or you could have a great one and the hiring manager could lose it for you.
Or the opposite.
Exactly.
I just want to share this. Lee, I disagree on your last comment, by the way. I'm sure you'd make a great guest on the show. But Lee Harding wrote, what I find fascinating in terms of Martin's questions, I'm going back, sorry, but sometimes it's worth it. I thought this was brilliant. Would a senior peer point the finger at procurement if they couldn't find a piece of software that took their 16 boxes for their 40K budget? Nope, they wouldn't, because procurement don't treat internal stakeholders like customers.
Exactly. That's a wider way.
Boom. Yeah. Funny.
There is an experience element here as well. So we've all discussed, we've been agency side, we've gone kind of in-house. You know that.
And we've aged a bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, a little bit, but.
We do, like we said, we're talking 19 years experience, 17 years experience. I think you've got about the same. So you get a lot more. The more experience you've got, the lot more audacious you get to go, I'm sorry, no, Mr. Hiring Manager. And I'm being very sexist today. All my hiring managers are men.
the value of TA has risen as well. I think, you know, several years ago, it was that small little function in the corner of HR. It's grown. Mm. You know, you are now seeing TA being a real fundamental part of HR teams, which is great to see. And if you look at the people that lead HR teams, you'll never see a TA person that's leading. It's always someone that's come from HR business partnering or from L&D or some other area. So even in spite of that, TA is really the area in HR that's grown probably the most, or certainly that I've seen over the last several years. Mm.
Do you actually think TA should sit in HR?
Yeah, I do see it as sitting in HR. I think a cohesive relationships with your business partners and everyone else that's in the people floor, I think is important. Yeah, I think I think the relationship, especially you have with your business partners, should be hand in glove.
Being
connected to them is great and important. Mm. I don't see it separate.
Yeah, Katrina, just on that, do you mean TA sitting in the HR team or peer to peer, as in
next
a peer to
I would put it.
Yeah,
sitting in the function.
I don't mean physically in the building, right? I just mean as far as TA is its own function, but it's parallel to HR and to marketing and to sales and to whatever other functions, you know. But I just see it having its own worth now, as opposed to, it's part of HR itself. That's what I kind of meant. But we won't go there. That'll take forever. And we've got an awesome question from Debbie.
Hey, Debbie.
We need a whole show on that. I'd love to have a big fist fight on that one.
Yeah.
How do you handle hiring? Hello, Debbie. Sorry, that was very rude of me, wasn't it? How do you handle hiring managers who want to shop before they commit, even when they have a great candidate right there in the hand? We like this candidate. Good interview. Who else have you got? We want to interview several before we commit. Do you get that? Or do you just slap them around, Sonny?
No, I've seen that. I've seen that many a time. And I think, again, it's being brave enough to tell them that they're being ridiculous. You know, if you've, and also show them the data of how long it's taken to get to the point that you're at, and back it up with fact. Don't just back it up with emotion. Yeah. But yeah, if you've got a great candidate, why not offer them the job? We could be waiting X amount of time, which means X amount of money that it's going to cost with an open seat. So show them the data on cost as well of waiting.
Yeah.
Which is always a great way.
And what project that you're going to deliver that's going to be even worse. And...
Yeah, but it's a human thing, isn't it? What if we wait? Will we get something better? Yeah, potentially. But then you could say that with the next person. When do you stop? If you've got a good candidate, they tick all the boxes, then hire them.
Equally, there's a point that don't present somebody you don't believe in, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're an advocate for that individual as much as you're an advocate for the business. I know Debbie buys into this 100%. I mean, she builds really strong, positive, you know, kind of working relationships with the individuals that she represents. So when she goes to bat, and if she's telling a hiring manager, this is a person you need to hire, she would have done all her due diligence. She knows exactly why that person is spot on. So she's in a position then to kind of go, why would you want, after everything I've just told you about this individual, why would you want to wait for this perhaps other person to come into play? Mm. And I think that's the point you're making, Simon, is that you've got to be prepared to really advocate for the people that you're representing, both from a business perspective, but equally from an individual candidate perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you're sending that shortlist in as well, don't send 8 candidates. You know, send a couple of candidates that you believe in that can do the job. I think it devalues your legitimacy if you're sending huge shortlists out to your hiring manager. It shows that you don't really fully understand what they need, or you're not quite sure. Whereas if you send, look, there's 2 candidates, they can both do the job. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they've ticked
off. Again,
much better position.
That wouldn't happen if you do that intake strategy session correctly as well, and set the scene and explain. And then if you know your market and all that kind of information, so you can say, look, there are only so many. So if you're setting the scene from the beginning, I agree with you.
Because so many hiring managers will say, I need to see several people. Why? It's just an arbitrary number that you're saying, you know, not needed.
A few positive comments I also just want to add. Chris Allen Smith, be a trusted advisor in all things chat, especially critical data. And hang on, there's more to it. Sorry, there's the rest of it. Also know their business and what type of, I'm not sure they're, oh, people, I guess, are missing from their team to help establish high-performing team. True as well. Oh, Sarah Gordon, TA should sit in HR as long as HR sits in the C-suite. You could argue TA should be more closely connected to marketing, I guess. TA impacts everything, Sarah, and definitely deserves a voice of its own. It does deserve a voice of its own.
Yeah.
Sarah Gordon, you're going to come on and debate that one out.
But yeah, you are, Sarah.
It can have a voice of its own within an HR team. It doesn't have to assimilate
into one. If the HR team let it.
Yeah, absolutely. If it's allowed to grow and develop.
That doesn't happen. I've seen teams where there's the real friction, where the roles and responsibility haven't been outlined properly, and they're all
And it comes back to, I think people don't understand what we do, you know, and people that lead those teams. Like I said, you don't see any leaders of people teams and HR teams that have come from TA. So I think we're the misunderstood kind of function within that remit as well.
I'm still trying to work out what HR do, and I've been running events for them for years. And I tell them that every single time. I'm still trying to work it out.
I think in the eyes of the business,
I'm the generation that was ignored by HR. Sorry.
Yeah. And I was with you on that. I think that in the eyes of the business, HR have accreditation, CIPD. Recruitment talent acquisition has no accreditation. So by virtue of...
No? Okay. Yeah.
I think there is a mindset shift there where it's kind of like, well, that's an accredited profession. Whereas, as we have discussed at the top of the show, some 177 people that we've spoken to just dropped into recruitment. And I think that continually comes back as a kind of narrative. But HR are accredited. Talent acquisition isn't accredited. So here's a question for you, no right or wrong answer. Do you think that some form of accreditation, Simon, would validate, add value, increase the professionalism of recruitment in some way, shape or form?
No, I don't think it would to people in HR. I think showing them what we do, bringing them into our processes more and demonstrating it is the accreditation that you need, not a qualification on your CV. And again, it's because we talked about it earlier. You know, if you just provide your stakeholders with CVs that have all the work's been done, but you've not shown them the work, what do you expect? They're not going to think, you've been on LinkedIn for an hour, you've got several candidates, you've pinged them over to me, easy. Whereas if you did a LinkedIn search with them and said, look, you know, there's one person within
the 200-mile
reason, 200 miles that can do this job. Can you see how difficult it is to find them? We'd be better off.
Yeah.
And then, once you're showing them that, you can then say, okay, now, do you understand when you're sitting in an interview, you need to be, you know, persuading them and wooing them to come in, because that's what we're doing, isn't it?
Oh, I love LinkedIn live searches where you start off with 20,000 great candidates, but by the time you've put all the filters in, you've got two people in the whole of the country, because it really does sober them up to the fact that, you know what, this is going to be a really, really hard role to fill, and you're going to have to play the part as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if these are the two people that we say we're going after, we need to put a kind of plan around that. We can't just be like, hey, we looked at your profile, because they get that kind of message every day, all day. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Not if they've read the Robot Proof Recruiter, though.
It is true.
Sorry.
Third plug. Nice done.
Yeah, but the second plug, nobody on the podcast will have got the second plug because I only showed it.
Oh, yeah. A hat trick of plugs.
No, I've got one more in yet. No, I'm kidding. But it's the worst. It actually reduces response rate. Seriously, anybody who actually uses that, it reduces your response rate by 80%. Writing, I came across your profile on. Crazy. Yeah. People just go, delete.
Yeah.
Mad.
Yeah, totally. I think Sarah's come back with a comment there on, I think.
We did that one.
No, one underneath it.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
Show your workings. I did that already.
Oh, did you? Well, I just wanted to see it again.
Okay, here we go, three times. Anyone on the podcast will be like, what is wrong with them? Right, here we go. Jayashree. But talent acquisition is a skill. It's innate. All other specializations in HR are competency, not skills that can be built, e.g. talent development or CMB.
Interesting. Looks like we've got the other side of the debate there. I totally want to set up a show where we talk about the difference between HR and talent acquisition and, you know, the value prop of both, because I think it's really important. Because I do think, you know, back to the subject of kind of that kind of service provision mindset, does that come from some form of not feeling on an equal level with either business peers or HR or something along those lines? Do we basically, as recruiters, do we have an inferiority complex? Yeah. And where does that come from?
That's a great question.
I don't.
I think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you feel that you're less than, you will be less than. And I think there are a lot of people in our industry that are just happy to be there. You know, maybe they've been through the periods of seeing how, you know, we were the smallest part of HR and our voice was the smallest, and they're just happy now that we've got a bigger voice and a bigger part to play.
Yeah. And I think it's
I think going back to the data, there's all that. And you know, if you don't even think you have it, go and have a look at the internet. Believe me, you'll find data of how you were doing. You know, you can go and show them, like, look at the other companies, what they're doing, how they represent themselves, look at how we're doing, and just like you said, and then you will feel like you're partnering as well. What's John written here? Sorry, John Rose. TA equals internal recruiter equals external in the eyes of HR.
Ooh. Discuss TA versus TM. Talent acquisition.
John, you're being too cryptic.
I know where he's going with that. But I think that's a whole story.
I think he's being lazy and not typing the whole thing out. Being lazy, John.
So just,
the previous test, by the way, in case anyone else think I'm being rude, I know all these people.
Just coming back to the kind of topic title of the show, Simon. So for those individuals that want to get onto that level where they're a business peer of, you know, of a hiring manager, what 1, 2, 3 things would you say to them? Look, you need to do these things consistently, and that will start to get you to that point. If you're not there now, these 3 things, 1, 2, or 3 things will help you start that momentum. You know, in your experience, what do you do that gets you on that kind of level with?
Yeah, I do think we talked about the fact that the mentality is crucial. So you have to, first of all, somehow find it in yourself that you are equal to these people. And don't live and breathe a hierarchical structure, and accept that you are the expert in the room. I think that is fundamentally the key thing. I think you've got to believe that yourself before you can get anyone else to believe that you're an expert in the room. So
yeah,
for me, that's crucial. But then also that data, you know, use that data. Mm. It is a crucial tool to storytell.
Yeah.
And I think at the moment we jump up and down a lot and we say, this is what we should be doing, but we don't back it up with facts. Mm. So I think, you know, if you believe that you are the expert and you show that you're expert with the data, you're going to be going in the right way, the right direction.
And I think you touched upon something that you, you know, you yourself have been experienced and found really powerful, was having really supportive leaders, really supportive people, advocates in the business for you and your value. And I think that's important too. That may not be a talent acquisition head of or head of people, could be a business sponsor, but you, I think you do need somebody to advocate for you in the business as well.
Yeah, the person, the person that brought me into in-house was same as Lee, was Emma Neary, who works for moneysupermarket.com. And three of her talent acquisition partners all came from running their own business. So I think that straight away just shows you the strength of character of someone who would bring in three people with big opinions on you know, running their own business. You'd probably shy away from that. I think they're not the people that I want to kind of bring in. But it is, if your leader's got that backbone and your leader has that kind of innate strength, then you have that freedom to then go out and express yourself as a TA professional.
Yeah, I think that individual
that's
you just mentioned
really is
super smart. Super smart. Immediately realized the value that you three could bring. Commercial acumen, drive, understanding,
creativity.
Yeah,
and a lot of people.
Because if you run your own business, you're really resilient, aren't you? You'll go and find new ways of doing things. You'll circumnavigate to get where you need to get to. And
it's certainly the hardest thing that I've ever done is running your own business. So, and so much respect for people that are doing it now, because that job 100%. Was incredibly, incredibly difficult. So, but now, I mean, I love to see small recruitment business independents, you know, matching the big boys out there and delivering as well. It's great to see.
And that's the thing. When you go in-house, just because you come from agency world, don't lose the respect for the agency folks, right? Remember, you were there once. Let's support one another. It's a, you know, we're a community. We're not two sides of the fence here. We can work in partnership really well.
But the most perverse thing about that, Glenn, is it's the people then. You come in from agency into in-house, get drunk on power, and start treating them like you were treated. And it's a circle of bad behavior. And it's crazy that, you know, you experience it and then you go and deliver it to someone else rather than being, I know exactly how you feel. I've been there,
I think there's a lot of recruiters discovering how recruiters treat candidates at the current time as well. While they're all job hunting. I hope they remember that when they go in, they've got a job as well. Yeah. So both, if you're in-house, how you treat agent, but even just how recruiters treat each other. It's just,
but some people that come in-house, you know, that the ego gets puffed up, you know, they peacock around and they want to, you know, they want to show that they've now got some power. And it's crazy. Yeah. You know, you've been there, you know what it's like.
Yeah, exactly. So respect the role they're doing. Right. And I remember agency side, some of the best conversations I had with TA people were just really honest ones where they were like, look, Glenn, appreciate, you know, you want our business, but at the moment there's this and this, we don't really need to engage you, but we can, if this kind of scenario comes up. And you're like, you know what, I can work with that rather than continually cold calling somebody who's just generally not, you know, kind of interested or going to engage. Yeah. So I think, you know, respect to one another within the community is really important, super important. So to Katrina's point, for those people that are just kind of not getting back to recruiters that are applying for your roles and stuff like that.
Stop it.
Stop it and step up, right? These people are part of your community. Yeah. Show them some respect. Give them some feedback.
And also because you're just damaging your future recruitment, but just treat people as you'd like to be treated, because the shoe could be on the other foot like that. So
I do think it cuts both ways though. I think that, you know, if you are approaching in-house teams, do your research.
Do your work first.
Don't just say, hey, we want to work with you and fill roles. Well, you don't know anything about us. You know, how do you know that? We might not be a good fit. There's so many things that you can do to just, you know, give yourself some quick credibility.
Definitely. Yeah, I understand.
Don't start with, I want to work with you.
Yeah, the same if you're job searching and want to approach a TA team. The same thing, do your research.
Yeah.
So, as well. So, we're out of time.
What?
So we did sign up two more guests, but unfortunately they won't be on until December. We seriously have a long queue going, much as they don't know that, but December. Next week we have Rowan Dickinson. I am saying that correctly. I am talking about actually mentoring, which should be quite cool. We visited that topic earlier in the year, so it'd be quite nice to have another viewpoint on it, which I think is incredibly important. And actually some of what you've just been talking about, Simon, it was almost like getting mentors in the business, isn't it, to have people on your side to help you. So thank you for that. That was awesome.
Thank you, Simon. Awesome,
man. And thank you, seeing you said you don't often come on these things, for deigning to come on the social media show on
Friday afternoon
at 3 o'clock when it's sticking
hot. You guys are great. I love your show. And Glenn, you've got the kindest face in talent acquisition. You just look like a very kind man, I have to say, with a glorious beard.
Well,
I don't look kind, which is quite worrying.
I will take that compliment.
I've got a problem with your beard. I am obsessed by it, so I need to get out of this conversation now.
I'll send this here.
Like, seriously, if anybody knows someone who has beard oil, we really do want a beard oil sponsor. That would just be so funny. And it's just someone knows someone that makes beard oil, for goodness sake. Anyway, on that note, thank you everybody who's tuned in, and for your fantastic questions. Well, everyone's been all over, which has been really awesome. We shall see you at, of course, thank you, Enterprise Alumni, of course, for keeping us going. And, of course, Mr. Hogyard for being on the show. We shall see you at the same time, which would be 3 p.m. UK time before I get in trouble, 10 a.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. European and 7 a.m. Pacific. Anyway, thank you again, everybody, and have the most wicked weekend. Bye.
Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thanks. Thank you.
Bye.